In your face. Well, Monday, the 1st of December, is World AIDS Day. I'm joined by Richard Keane, who is the CEO of Living Positive Victoria. And the theme this year is No One Left Behind. Richard, welcome back to 3CR.
Thanks so much, James. Great to be here.
Tell us more about the theme, because some folks are left behind.
Yes, they are left behind. And not only here, but with what's happened globally in the last 12 months, with a lot of the funding that was kind of provided by the US being pulled and a whole range of things, there's a whole lot of community and civil organisations that don't have the capacity to deliver the services they once did. And that's largely driven this year's theme globally. However, even here locally, there are communities that sort of still remain at the margins of the HIV response in Australia and kind of don't look like me, who's a white cisgender, gay white male, early 50s. The HIV response was kind of designed by and for people like me, and it's taken us a number of decades to kind of move away from those old models and to think about how do we engage everybody in it. Equitable way.
And you're right on to that, because Living Positive Victoria has released a multicultural strategy very recently.
Yes, very recently. We just launched it this Monday. It's come from a lot of work that we've already been doing in that space well, but we wanted to move away from just being responsive to emerging issues and be deliberate in our strategy and our engagement. Around about 60 to 65% of folks who engage with our organisation now are folks who are born overseas. And when you kind of take a step back and put yourself in the shoes of somebody who might be here on a working visa, might be here as a student, have received a HIV diagnosis without a support network or family support or a whole range of other things, it's a really complex issue. And about 5 years ago, even small organisations can make changes. 5 years ago, we've always had an affirmative action policy around employing positive people. So if we get two candidates for a role and they've got equivalent skill sets, we'll via for the person living with HIV to provide that opportunity. We've also extended that out now to include multicultural folks. So if we've got two people of the same skill set, we will veer and have a look at the quality and whether that person from a multicultural background can come into our organisation, because part of the reason that we've had such a high rate of engagement is that that policy shift a few years ago means that people actually see themselves represented in our organisation and they feel like it's a safe place for us to come. But we felt like there's a lot more work to do over the next couple of years to ensure that we provide services that are accessible to all positive people and that are culturally and psychologically safe for those communities.
I mean, that vision I just had of folks, you know, being isolated, getting a diagnosis for a condition that is quite isolating anyway, possibly, you know, living in, you know, community that's not kind of, you know, knowledgeable about their sexuality. They might be in the closet.
Yes.
They may be working a job that's exploitative. They may be on a precarious visa.
Absolutely.
And no Medicare.
No. And supporting those folks who are going through a visa application or a residency application, sometimes that can take years. And a whole range of costs that they have to pay along the way. So it's not just about providing that connection into our organisation, but how do we maintain support for those people so they can step in and out when they need our support, and we can support them across the lifetime of that application process, which can sometimes go on for 4 years and has, you know, little swings and merry-go-rounds, and they've got to do the health tests again, which are additional cost. After 18 months, you have to do that again, even though your visa process hasn't had an outcome. So there's a whole range of different pressures and situations that build on those multicultural folks that aren't experienced by people who were born here. And we've never shied away from using our limited resources to centre folks at the margin in everything that we do.
World AIDS Day is Monday. What can we expect?
I think that what we can expect, we've got a launch this year that's being hosted by the Burnett Institute down in Paran. So we'll have a range of positive speakers. Living Positive Victoria has always had the privilege of overseeing the launch it'll be this Monday. And so we'll have a range of positive speakers. We've got Kalini, who is a Pacific Island trans woman, who will be speaking about her lived experience. And when we look just outside our nation, we've seen an explosion of transmissions in Fiji, in PNG, in other areas, mostly around injecting drug use, and the lack of government's willingness to engage in harm reduction kind of strategies to reduce those areas. And we've seen that start to spill out across other Pacific Nations communities. And so there's a real focus for us in our region to support those communities and to assist them with developing frameworks, prevention frameworks and support frameworks to reduce that increase that we're seeing.
And once again, that increase is under more pressure and certainly is probably being in part driven by the lack of US aid.
Absolutely. And I think there's only so much that we can kind of meet. And I do like the fact that DFAT and the federal government are focused close to our region. So they are providing extensive support and capacity building across those communities in the South Pacific.
People with HIV, of course, are more susceptible to the symptoms of Mpox. Mm. Where have we landed with the outbreak or the latest outbreak? Is there a latest outbreak? Where are we at?
I think we've still got a couple of diagnoses each week. Some of those are local, but the majority of those are from people travelling. Whilst we've had now probably almost coming up to 2 years of access to vaccination opportunities for MSM communities in particular here, folks in other countries around the world don't get that same access. We are very privileged in Australia to have free access to those vaccinations. And my word of advice to folks, if you haven't had your first shot or you haven't had your second booster, go in and do that because it will significantly reduce the potential impacts of Mpox exposure.
Of course, the theme No One Left Behind kind of, you know, is a challenging theme for the HIV community. Because it's almost as if, you know, HIV's been left behind in terms of the psyche of the LGBTIQ community. And I think a lot of people must feel invisible and there must be feelings of, you know, being invalidated.
Yeah, I think there is a bit of that starting to creep in. We certainly still maintain really strong partnerships across Thorn Harbour Health in the prevention space and a whole lot of stuff. But there is this kind of feeling that it's all but over, that we've kind of reduced, and we have had success up until recently, where we're seeing some concerning signs about slight rises in Victoria around new transmission rates and other things that we're not seeing in similar sized states like Queensland and New South Wales. We're seeing those rates of new transmissions in particularly Queensland and New South Wales either stable or dropping significantly. And in Victoria in the last couple of years, we're just seeing that start to creep up. And that's
so
a real concern for us.
Well, Mpox, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Mpox must increase the risk of HIV transmission during Mpox transmission, right?
Yeah, during any infection. And particularly if you're not aware, you may not have tested, you may not know you're living with HIV. Sometimes another infection is how people are diagnosed. And I think one of the key things that we've got to do, and our National Association of People Living with HIV Australia has developed what they call a home test kit, so people can access their website and get home tests sent to them. So far, they've distributed 50,000 home tests across the country, right across the breadth and width of Australia, particularly outside of metropolitan areas. And about 15% of those people who've been accessing home HIV testing have never tested before. So I think new novel approaches to reaching those people that are yet to be diagnosed are absolutely essential, because what folks may not understand is the vast majority, around about 97% of people living with HIV, have an undetectable viral load, which means that they can't transmit HIV to their sexual partners. So the bulk of those transmissions are coming from people who are unaware that they're living with HIV and yet to be diagnosed.
So Victoria's a case study of rising transmission slightly. What's driving it?
Oh, I think there's a whole lot of factors. I kind of feel like there were significant funding cuts in the last 18 months across, just right across the community services sector, not just impacting HIV, but specifically Living Positive Victoria lost 17.5% of our funding in the last 18 months. So you really have to shift and recalibrate your service delivery, your staffing levels, a whole range of things. That has to have an impact on service delivery and reaching those communities that are impacted by HIV. And I think there's just also been a feeling of a deprioritisation. We were talking about it across the LGBTIQ plus community, but more broadly, even within the health minister's portfolios, the fact that it used to be a hepatitis, HIV and sexual health strategy. We still have a HIV strategy, but the main frame of that is now hepatitis and sexual health strategy. So it kind of felt like that was being deprioritised a couple of years ago. And unfortunately, for the first time in about 20 years, we won't have the health minister of Victoria opening World AIDS Day with an address. So we've had the health minister attend from both sides of politics for a couple of decades now to open World AIDS Day, to recommit to our virtual elimination of HIV in Australia. And we're really disappointed. We understand that she must have multiple, you know, priorities and everything else. Let's be realistic about her portfolio and what she needs to do. But we again kind of feel that being a sign in our community that this is being deprioritised with the funding cuts, with the lack of kind of in-person engagement and reassurance that this remains a priority for this government.
Well, historically, when ministers have kind of, you know, bypassed big HIV AIDS events, usually it's because there's something wrong.
Yeah. And I guess the other part of that is that we're halfway through a state straight strategy, which was launched in 2022 and goes to 2030. There was supposed to be a midpoint review. We've been told that there's not the resources to do a midpoint review. And that's concerning to us because we can't measure against the goals that were in that strategic plan and have accountability across those key kind of areas if there's not a midpoint review. So 8 years is a very long gap not to be able to review what we're doing and to see if our strategy's online, and that's concerning to us too. So there's just little signs along the way, and maybe it's because I'm part of that community that I feel it more intensely. Like I said, I want to balance that out by reminding folks that there's a whole lot of priorities across healthcare and all that kind of stuff, but it just adds to that kind of sinking feeling that this is not a top line issue.
Well, when you add it up, so you've had 17.5% funding cut at Living Positive Victoria, and then for the first time in 20 years, the Victorian Health Minister is not speaking at your World AIDS Day.
Yeah.
Event, yeah. That's a bit of a slap in the face, I've got to say.
It kind of feels like it a little bit, you know. You know, to be bold and venture and not cause too many ripples, but we've got to be honest, and you know, this is in your face, and we kind of do have to talk about the reality on the ground.
So that 17.5% funding cut, is that from the Victorian government?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And so, how did they justify it?
We had a kind of unique situation where we used to be located in a place called Coventry House for the Coventry House Partnership, which brought together ourselves, Positive Women Victoria, to be co-located in the same environment. That we had rental support from the department that was paid annually each year, so it wasn't ongoing funding, but it had been paid each year for about 12 years, as well as some support for admin and other kind of services. We did get a 12-month warning that that money was going to go, that that could no longer be funded. So we did have some time to readjust, but then at the same time, after while we were still trying to readjust to that significant funding cut, we got a letter in the mail, not an email, not a phone call, to say this is your new funding agreement, and realised we'd had another 5% funding cut, which was kind of experienced right across the community services sector too, that 5%. It is a challenging fiscal environment in Victoria, let's be really honest about it, but we remain concerned that you know, that idea that everyone takes a haircut is, you know, there are impacts for those decisions. And unfortunately, I think that not just now, but into the next couple of years, Victoria could kind of be dropping the ball a bit when it comes to reducing new transmissions if we're not careful. It just means that also too, that organisations need to partner more strongly together. So in some ways, sometimes a real big challenge like this can have positive outcomes because we all kind of sit in our own corners and we get our own funding. And even though we engage with each other, we will have to learn to partner a lot better and kind of cost share across service delivery and other things like that. So whilst that kind of innovation is required as a result of those cuts, I think that can be beneficial long term too. And we have to, it's not a bad thing to have to review everything you do.
So is the minister sending a parliamentary secretary to your World AIDS Day event?
We're not sure. We still haven't heard back. We heard that the Deputy Chief Health Officer will be there to represent the government, but we were hoping for, at least if she wasn't able to turn up, maybe a junior health minister or somebody else would be coming along to do the opening address. So we'll just kind of car park, the opening address, and move into the other activities of the day and just kind of acknowledge that even though the minister's not there, the responsibility is still hers.
Because that's kind of the sting in the tail with this. I mean, politicians love to go to events. They love to take credit for all the good stuff. World AIDS Day is a huge event. It's emotional. You know, it's a great way for politicians to show their credibility or lack thereof with our community. The fact that the government is not sending an MP speaks volumes.
It kind of does. And really, when you think about where the health minister's seat in, it takes up Daylesford and that kind of area. These would be communities with, you know, high levels of folks and knowing folks living with HIV in those communities, very progressive, very LGBTIQ centred around Daylesford and that kind of area. So that concerns me that she might be a bit tone deaf there too.
Any local members coming along? I mean, whereabouts are you based now?
So we've moved to 25 Elizabeth Street in the city. One of the ways that we mitigated those costs was to downsize our office footprint, and we saved a significant amount of money, which meant that I didn't have to cut as many staff hours and programs as I thought I was going to have to be. So we've kind of relocated. It's central. It's in the city. It's really accessible to everybody. And we're really pleased about kind of recalibrating and setting our future. And whilst the message can sometimes sound dire, I guess what gives me perspective and a little bit of hope is that I was lucky enough in 2024 to attend the international conference in Montreal. And I thought there'd be lots of organisations like Living Positive Victoria that are run by and for people living with HIV. They were sparse across the ground, and it just reminded me, despite all the challenges, we still have a significant amount of funding, a significant support from government and everything else to do the work that we do, and a unique opportunity and a privileged opportunity. And with that privilege comes responsibility to do the best we can with our resources.
Well, that's right. And considering all of that, that's why I'm amazed that there's no rep from the Allen government that actually wants to attend a World AIDS Day event to say, look at all the things that we're funding. But I suppose if they've cut you by 17.5%.
Yeah, maybe they don't want to shut up.
It is really terrible. I mean, I'm amazed that there's no upper house MPs, you know, who are going along.
Yeah.
Who want to get a bit of credibility and get a photo op.
Look, and I think that that's a reflection on some work that we need to do as a community and with our sector partners. I know at the federal level, what has been so successful over the lifetime of the HIV response in Australia is a bipartisan approach, and they have a Friends of HIV network in the federal parliament, which is made up of representatives from all parties that come together in support of HIV. And so that's all parties. And I think creating a framework like that in Victoria might be really beneficial for us into the future.
I mean, it's a terrible headline. Allen government snubs people living with HIV on World AIDS Day. Terrible.
Yep.
Richard Keane, the CEO of Living Positive Victoria. Thanks for joining us today on 3CR.
Thank you so much. 3CR.